Jesus said, I have set you an example. You should do as I have done for you. Some years ago now, a lord of the realm died, and his name was Lord Besborough. And as was the custom, the Times newspaper printed an obituary. Unfortunately, a mistake was made, perhaps by the understandable error of someone mishearing the name. And the Times printed the obituary of a Lord Desborough. You can see where the confusion came. Unfortunately for the Times, the noble Lord Desborough was very much alive. And he phoned the editorial office of the Times. And after introducing himself, he said, I've been reading my obituary in your newspaper this morning with much interest. And there was a hurried, panic-stricken whispering at the other end of the line, to be followed by a slightly more authoritative voice asking, excuse me, sir, where are you speaking from? Where you're speaking from obviously affects the content of what you say and the degree of authority that attaches to it. And that's why the words of Jesus, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you, have amazing power. And they present us with a truly authentic challenge. It's interesting that in John's Gospel, there is no account of the Last Supper as we have it in the other three Gospels. Instead, John describes an amazing action of Jesus, where he performed the lowliest of tasks performed by a household servant. And when he'd done it, he asked the disciples, do you understand what I've done? And he said, you call me teacher and Lord. And rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. And by doing that, Jesus becomes for us the model par excellence of humility and service, and indeed of true greatness. So when Jesus and his disciples had gathered in that upper room to celebrate the Passover meal, none of the disciples wanted this lowliest of chores. So Jesus went ahead and gave them an object lesson in greatness. You can picture the scene. He removed his outer garment. He took a towel. He filled the basin with water. And he moved slowly around the group, washing each one's feet and wiping them with a towel. And that was unheard of in Jewish culture at that time. Only the lowliest of the low did such a task. And I imagine that the room was completely quiet, completely silent, and that all you could hear was the embarrassed breathing of the disciples and the trickle of water. For here is God in human form, stripping himself to wash the feet of his proud friends. Here is God in human form, prepared to get dirty helping people. Here is God touching a part of another's body that was taboo for anyone thought to be important. Here is God, who loves people so much that he is willing to humiliate himself to demonstrate the degree of that love. And that is the true greatness of the kingdom of God. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Earlier I commented that where you speak from affects the content of what you say and the degree of authority that attaches to it, which is why Jesus' words have so much power and authority. Their words highlighting the importance of humility, and in doing that, they shine a spotlight on true greatness. One of the great medical missionaries of the 19th, 20th centuries was Albert Schweitzer. And Schweitzer had been invited to go to Chicago in the United States by the University of Chicago to address a meeting there. And he arrived at the Central Station in Chicago, where there was a big crowd of well-wishers and admirers, which had been organized by the faculty of the university to greet him. And as the train was pulling into the station, the professor who had organized the whole event ascended the podium and was beginning to detail all the accomplishments of Dr. Schweitzer. He was a world-famous organist. He had written some amazing theological books. He'd worked courageously in Africa among people with leprosy. And in the middle of this wonderful introduction, as Schweitzer's train was coming along into the platform, Schweitzer looked out of his carriage window. And there, at the back of the crowd, he saw a frail, elderly lady struggling with a number of large pieces of luggage and trying to pull them across the platform of the station. He got off the train to much applause, and as he was being called to the microphone to address the crowd, he simply walked past the podium and he pushed his way through the crowd and made his way to where this elderly lady was struggling with her luggage. And he bowed to her graciously and he asked her if she would allow him to carry her luggage. And at this, the crowd had turned round and was completely stunned. And after helping the woman, Dr. Schweitzer returned to the platform. He went to the microphone and he said, "I'm very sorry about that interruption, but aren't we put on this earth to help each other, especially those who are weak and those who are frail. And all the honours in the world mean nothing if we fail to care for the least of these in our midst. Now, where Schweitzer spoke from affected the content of what he said and the authority with which he said it. And like his Lord and Master Christ before him, Schweitzer was emphasizing that true greatness lies not in worldly acclamation, but in humble service. And Jesus showed that, important as he was, true greatness lay in the humility of service. And Schweitzer took him at his word and followed his example. One of my great heroes, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., once said, "Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics to serve. All you need is a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love." And I think he was right. You and I are called as disciples of Jesus in the 21st century to be great through the humble service of others. But, and it is an important but, as well as being involved in giving humble service, we should also be prepared to receive it. Peter was embarrassed, you may remember, when Jesus wanted to wash his feet, and Jesus had to rebuke him. I wonder how often we shun the humble service of others. One of the people who stands out in my memory in these terms is a lady who once told me that she didn't want to be beholden to anyone. She didn't want others to help her because she felt she would be in their debt. And I felt then, and I feel now, how very sad that was. And I wonder how often we shun the humble service of other people because we're embarrassed. We experience problems, we have difficulties, but are embarrassed to even admit that we are, let alone lean on the help and support of other people through them. And sometimes we want to think that people don't have problems and difficulties, so we shouldn't have them. And our pride stops us from seeking the help and support of other people because we want to believe that we can stand on our own two feet. And not to do so, we believe, is an admission of weakness. And where we speak from then affects the content of what we say. And if that's so, the content of what we speak under such circumstances just illustrates pride. A minister, it is said, once preached a sermon on pride, and after the service, a woman went up to him and thanked him for it. And she told him that she was really distressed and needed to confess a sin. Now, in all the years I've been a minister, when I've been at the door of the church after the service, no one has ever stopped me to say that they wanted to confess a sin. And this minister found this was a unique experience for him. So he was intrigued. So he asked her, "What is the sin you want to confess?" She said, "Your sermon pricked my conscience. I need to confess the sin of pride. You see, I often sit in front of the mirror in my bedroom, sometimes for about an hour, just admiring my beauty." "Oh," replied the minister, "madam, that is not the sin of pride. It is the sin of imagination." So often, we imagine that we can stand on our own two feet and don't need the help of Christian friends. That is the sin of imagination. And it's also the sin of pride. It's true that Jesus challenges us to give ourselves in humble service of others. For him, however, humility is a two-way process. Being prepared to serve and being prepared to receive service. That's why when Peter said he didn't want Jesus to wash his feet, Jesus said to him, "Unless I wash you, you have no part of me." Jesus said, "I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." And we're challenged to give ourselves in humble service, but also reminded that we should be prepared to receive the humble service of other people.